When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to The Late Show. My next guest is an author, Emmy-winning documentarian, certified MacArthur genius, and Harvard professor. His new book is called The Black Box, Riding the Race. Please welcome back to The Late Show, Henry Louis Gates, Jr.
Thank you, brother.
Henry, lovely to see you.
You can call me Skip.
Okay. Oh, I'll call you Skip on air.
Okay,
that's okay.
Great. Yeah.
Now, before we get to your new book right here, which is The Black Box, right there, Riding the Race, I want to say congrats. You're celebrating 10 years of Finding Your Roots.
Yeah.
And which is a fascinating show.
Thank you.
But I was a guest when the show was called Faces of America.
That's right.
Okay, that was in 2010.
That's right.
And I had a really good time. It was absolutely fascinating to learn about my family, all the extended family, things I knew nothing about. And as I said, it was an honor. But I was always wondering, how did I end up on your list? Like, how did I get picked?
Well, we did this survey, and we were looking for the whitest person that we could find.
I wasn't going to tell this story, but there was a family history. There's a legend in the family that we were part Chickasaw, and you had my DNA was done, and then you said to me backstage, you said, "You're white, baby. You're the whitest man I've ever met."
That's true.
Yeah.
But you know, the story is quite fascinating. When I started what became Finding Your Roots, I only did African American guests. It was called African American Lives One. Started with Oprah, Quincy, Chris Tucker, Bishop T.D. Jakes, then that, because it was an experiment. Nobody knew if we could pull it off. And it did very well. So PBS asked me to do a sequel. So I did Maya Angelou, who was a good friend. I did Morgan Freeman. Anybody's played God and the President, you got to do his DNA, right?
Sure, sure.
And then that was a hit. Then I got a letter just over the transom, right, really, from a lady who I've never met. And she identified herself as being of Russian Jewish ancestry. And she said, "Dear Dr. Gates, I've always admired your stands on cultural pluralism and multiculturalism, your stand against anti-Semitism. But after watching African American Lives 1 and 2, I've decided you're a big fat racist because you don't do white people. Why don't you do a Jewish person like me?" And I couldn't believe it, because my whole brand, as it were, is African-American and African studies. That's what I teach. Mm-hmm. And so I called a black woman who was our account representative at Coca-Cola, which happened to be one of our sponsors. Her name was Ingrid Saunders-Jones. She's a very good friend to this day. And I said, "Ingrid, I'm holding this letter from this Jewish lady who says I'm a racist." She said, "What?" And she said, "Why?" I said, "Because we don't do white people. Or non-black people in the series. What should I say?" And there was a long pause, and then she said, "You know something, Skip?" I said, "What?" She said, "There are a lot more white people drinking Coke than black people."
So from our point of view...
I took that as a yes. And so, but then I had the problem, how do you choose white people? And if you have, because white people come in kinds, you know?
Sure, yeah.
And if you choose white people, what about Asian people? And then there are Roman Catholics, and there are Jewish people, and there are Sephardic Jews and Ashkenazi Jews. And so, you know what I did, Stephen?
What?
I did what Noah would do. I picked two Catholics, two Jews, two Asians, and you were... And you were my Irish Catholic quota.
There I was.
There you were.
Well, the thing, it was fascinating to me. I was so surprised to learn things. Like, I was related in the last sort of last 10 generations or something to Queen Noor, to Elizabeth Alexander, to Meryl Streep. Mm-hmm. It was fascinating. What are some of the things that you learned in that surprised you the most?
Well, the biggest thing that I learned about me was that at the time I was chairman of Black Studies at Harvard, chairman of African and African American Studies, and the chairman of African and African American Studies was half a white man. I am 49% white and 49% black.
And the other 2%?
Indeterminate. No, Native American.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I was flabbergasted. I had no idea that I had that much European ancestry.
Well, you're teaching, you've taught for over 40 years, mm-hmm. and your new book, as I said before, is The Black Box. And it's based on an Intro to African American Studies course that you teach at Harvard. Well, why write this book? And if your students buy it, do they automatically get an A?
Well, you're not really supposed to assign to the students books that you've written.
Right.
You know,
but they know you wrote it.
Well, I only decided to publish this book after I decided to stop teaching the course.
Okay.
And the reason that I did the approach that I did to structuring the course is that I hate bullies. And when I was an undergraduate, I went to Yale as an undergraduate. And I was at Yale between 69 and 73. The campus was full of ideological bullies, people trying to tell you how to be black. There were the black Muslims were there, the Black Panthers were there, the black cultural nationalists were there. You know, if your dashiki wasn't down to here and you didn't have a 2-foot-high afro, then you weren't black enough. People were telling you who you could date, who your friends could be. And I decided that if I ever was in a position of power or authority, I would take a stand against any kind of ideological bullying so that my students would not suffer the kind of anxiety and embarrassment and angst that my generation did.
Well, I'm curious what the black box is. Is that a literal box? Is that a metaphorical box? What is it a data recorder? What is this?
Well, you know, a black box, a data recorder,
okay,
is something we can't see inside, right? You can see that it has outputs, it has inputs, but its internal workings are not comprehensible. And that is the metaphor that I use for the world that our ancestors were forced to form under slavery. A world separated by what W.E.B. Du Bois called a veil. A veil that separated the white world and then the submerged black world. And Du Bois said famously, one always feels his two-ness, an American, a Negro, two warring ideals in one dark body. And it was in the black box that we were confined because of segregation, first because of slavery, then after Reconstruction, as you know so well as a South Carolinian, with the rollback of Reconstruction and the rise of Jim Crow, that's where we were relegated. And in the larger white world, which we could only, you know, visit with permission, we were stereotyped. We were defined as ugly. We were defined as stupid, venal, people who, you know, wanted to steal, potential rapists. So in the black box, we defined ourselves and created one of the world's great culture behind this color curtain, behind the veil.
What does writing the race mean, though?
Well, one of the things that black people had to prove incredibly, and you are sympathetic with this because of your Irish heritage, is that we were actually full human beings. In the 18th century, as you well know, he's quite a scholar. As you well know, there was a construct called the Great Chain of Being. At the top of the Great Chain of Being, imagine the staircase, an infinitely long staircase, with God at the top, and under God, on the next stair step, were the angels. And then there were the five varieties of man: Europeans, Asians, people from the subcontinent, Native Americans, and then either at the bottom of the scale of humanity or at the top of the scale of the animal kingdom, sat the African. And some racist philosophers decided that Africans weren't really human beings like Europeans. And other people said that our ancestors were. So how would you tell? They decided they had to show through writing. They had to create imaginative literature. So when Phyllis Wheatley, the first black person to publish a book of poetry in the English language, published it on September 1st, 1773, everybody reviewed her book. And they were reviewing it to decide what it signified about what they called the nature of the African. And some people said her poetry proved that Africans were human beings like Europeans. And other people, like Thomas Jefferson, said, no. Jefferson actually said, Phyllis Wheatley's poetry is beneath the dignity of criticism. And he said the poems published under her name. Mm-hmm. So even through Frederick Douglass, when he published his slave narrative in 1845, there were two white guys who had to write prefaces before the text saying, we know him, he's written this book, we've heard him, he's very articulate, and we're establishing his authorship. And that was a convention in black letters for a long time. The other thing that the book deals with is the fact that within the black box, there never was one way to be black. Black people have been arguing about what it means to be black since the day we got off the boat in Jamestown in 1619. So the course is constructed around the famous debates in the tradition because, again, fighting back against those bullies, I never wanted our students to think that there ever was one way to be black. My younger daughter, Liza, one time, she was this little kid. She said, Daddy, I wish I were your age and had grown up in the 60s. I said, why, baby? And she said, because our people were unified then. We spoke in one voice. I said, when was that? You know, I missed that episode. And we were arguing about whether we should stay in this country or go back to Africa, whether we should have industrial education or liberal arts education. And my favorite is, by what name should we call ourselves? So, you know, when I was 16, we went from being Negroes to being black, right? 1966. And that's when we started wearing afros and very proud of our black heritage. And I thought that ours was the first generation ever to have that debate. So in my lecture about naming, it's called What's in the Name, I just read these quotes that were letters to the editor. And the first person says, we should chisel off the name African from any of our cultural institutions because Phyllis Wheatley called herself the African, and the oldest cultural institution created in the box is the African Methodist Episcopal Church. But by the early 19th century, people thought, well, that was distancing us too far from the white Americans that we want to integrate with. So the first statement says, we got to chisel off the word African. The next person says, I think you're right. We should be colored because that's less a distance from white than black is. The next quote I read says, we should be African-Americans. African-Americans, one word. The next person said, African-American is the ugliest word I ever heard in the English language. And then at the end, I look up and I tell the kids, each of these statements was written between 1831 and 1845. Wow. So we have always had a diversity of opinion. And the last thing that I say to the class is that if there's only one thing that you remember from any of my lectures, about anything that I've said, I hope that it's this. If there are 47 million African Americans, that means there are 47 million ways to be black. Don't let a bully ever tell you how to be black. And that's it.
Skip, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you for listening to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert. Just one more thing. If you want to see more of me, come to The Late Show YouTube channel for more clips and exclusives.
Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar: Braving the Elements, hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar: Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Rise and shine, football fans. Start your day the right way with Morning Footy, a podcast that covers every aspect of the global game. Headlines, match previews, analysis, interviews, culture, fashion, and plenty of banter. Join as we track the thrills and spills of Europe's biggest title races, the business end of the Champions League season, a summer packed with international competitions, MLS, NWSL, and much more. Subscribe to Morning Footy.